This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Bridge senior writer Ron French on how Michigan colleges and universities stack up on social mobility. But first, the story of the Flint water crisis is tied in part to Blacksburg, Virginia. Virginia Tech University civil engineering professor Mark Edwards was contacted by Flint resident Leanne Walters when members of her family became ill after drinking lead-contaminated water. A team from Virginia Tech traveled to Flint and has continued to advocate for the city's residents. Sid Roy is a graduate student and communication director for Virginia Tech's Flint Water Study. He will speak at Western Michigan University Tuesday night at an event sponsored by the Lee Honors College. Sid Roy, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So can you recall exactly when you first became aware of the problems that were going on in Flint?
Right. This was late April of last year when, I wasn't initially involved, but I heard from my fellow graduate students that a resident in Flint was helping us get samples from her house, and the results that we'd gotten had shocked all of us. Our lab specializes, among other things, looking at lead in water problems across the United States. But specifically, Leanne's house, the lead levels that we saw were the highest, we've ever seen. So just to put in context, there is no safe level of lead, but the EPA requires a federal action at 15 parts per billion. Leanne's home, out of 30 samples, the average was 2,000, and the highest sample was 13,200. So it just gives you an idea of how astronomically high and dangerous the water that was coming out of Leanne's tap was for her and her family. So this was just, we thought, okay, maybe this was an isolated problem, but later on, and when Leanne was working with us and an EPA scientist, this amazing whistleblower, a guy called Miguel del Toro, he wrote this memo in June highlighting not only the problems of Leanne's house, but because Flint, as a city, was not practicing what's called corrosion control, a federally mandated action that you have to have to ensure that old cities like Flint, which have lead pipes, the lead stays on the pipes and doesn't come out into the water. So Miguel wrote this amazing memo and, scientifically accurate, and gave it to his colleagues, hoping that some action will be taken, because at this point, Flint switched its water source in April of 2014 to their local Flint River, and this was June of 2015. So for more than a year, citizens had been drinking this bad water. So the hope was, now that we know we have a lead problem, we have other water issues, this memo would show the light. Instead, what happened is shocking, in that this EPA scientist was sidelined, he was handled. If his memo hadn't been leaked to the press, none of this would have happened. If Miguel's concerns would have been listened to, none of this would have happened. So because Miguel was sidelined and we thought if we did not get involved, nothing would happen, that is when, in August of 2015, we officially launched a scientific relief effort, if you will, and we called it the Flint Water Study.
When you look back here, how much would you say is this a case of science not being done correctly, and how much of it is a case of people having the science in front of them and yet, for whatever reason, not acting appropriately on it?
As a scientist, it is definitely a problem where technical experts did not do their jobs. It could be attributed to the fact that they misunderstood the law, or they did not know exactly how to go about this. The MDEQ former director, Dan Wyant, when he resigned, acknowledged that mistakes were made, and his team did not interpret the law correctly. But I fail to understand, when you're in a position where you have the final authority on the decisions you make will impact the water that people drink, I would hope that you are technically more sound, your scientific knowledge is more accurate. So it is hard to pinpoint the specifics on, say, one individual, but collectively, we have seen a lacuna of inaction where people are just sitting around hoping that this problem would go away. So definitely a lack of scientific knowledge to an extent, is responsible for what happened.
What would you like to see happen next for the citizens of Flint?
I think it is important that for a city struggling with, you know, Flint has enough problems. It is economically backward. It has crime issues. But, you know, the past 6 months, we've met and interacted with so many Flint residents that they are just amazing. They love their home. They love where they grew up. So we have to, and despite this tragedy, we have to give them hope. I think the federal action, the declaration of emergency, the money coming in is good, but it has to be used in good sense. By that, I mean, in the short term, definitely do everything possible to make sure that the residents and the families keep getting, you know, bottled water filters and safe drinking water. In the long term, invest in education, nutrition, health services for kids and families, which should continue over their entire lifetime. But I think personally, an overarching theme that I see, and I'm happy that it is being discussed in the media, is the question of trust. You know, 2 weeks ago, the residents painted a block in Flint that said, "You want our trust back? We want Virginia Tech." And what they meant by that is they wanted us to continue to oversee water testing, and to whatever messages were coming out, we were the only people they would trust. They do not trust their state government. They do not trust the city government. So this shows the complete failure of a state and federal agencies not doing their jobs, and hence having lost the public's trust. So personally, I think they should do everything in their power possible to make sure Flint residents feel that they are being taken care of, adequate measures are being taken, and, you know, just work as hard as possible to get their trust back.
What would you like to see done more broadly across the country so that there is not a next Flint, another city where there's a water crisis like this one?
That's a great question. I think we have to, as a country, realize that we cannot take safe drinking water, you know, basic services for granted, because a lot of technical expertise and infrastructure investment goes into, you know, you opening your tap and getting safe water that meets federal standards. So the big picture issues that I see with Flint that can be applied to the entire nation is our aging infrastructure and, you know, strengthening of our water laws. So in terms of the former, you know, most of our infrastructure is very old. Some pipes in the country are over 100 years old. Specific to lead, you know, there are millions of lead pipes in this country, and we have to, in a sustained manner, go about in the coming years, replace all of these pipes, because as long as there is lead in the system, whether it's lead pipes or some sort of lead plumbing in old homes, there is a chance for lead exposure, and that is never okay. So continued investment in our infrastructure is critical. In terms of the legality of things, you know, Flint shows how, you know, you could violate federal laws and not even know it. So I think better education of the agencies who are doing their job is important. So definitely the EPA and the state DEQ should invest more in ensuring that the technicians they're training and who are coming into the and to do these jobs know exactly what they're getting into. Understand that their responsibility is not just meeting regulations, but protecting public health and giving them the tools and the expertise to ensure that while laws are met, people are not harmed as well. So there is a big picture in terms of infrastructure, overhaul of agency cultures and education. And I think because this is a good time as the entire nation is thinking about, you know, water and water issues, we have in our midst an incredible opportunity to create awareness of our water and how it gets to our homes, how hard it is, and to get the public thinking about we cannot just hope that basic services are given to us without our investing in them. So I think nationally, the awareness of water and the issues we face in the coming decade would be very useful in how, as a nation, we decide to deal with them.
The title of your address is Science as a Force for Public Good. Do you think that that what happened in Flint, if there is one silver lining in this cloud, it is that the role of science was part of the solution here in terms of not so much at the government level, but outside researchers were able to shine a light on what was happening to the residents of Flint.
I do. But you have to keep in mind that for over a year, you know, the same scientists in our profession at these agencies were failing at their jobs. So it took outside experts who were called in by citizens, by the way, who were tired of protesting, of getting rashes, of not being sure if their kids' health is being harmed when they bathe or drink this water. It took outside, you know, citizens months of sustained efforts. So this is a failure. The silver lining came a little too late. I agree that despite being attempts at being discredited, you know, Virginia Tech researchers, our group, you know, the Hurley medical doctor, Dr. Mona Anastasia, we kept insisting that our science is sound, and if you don't pay attention, more people will be put in harm's way. That was taken seriously, but it came at a cost, and the cost was a population not getting safe water and having health issues and maybe even lifetime with problems for some of them for a long time. So I think as a research group, when I look at what happened in Flint, science can be a force of public good if we remember that that is what we initially hoped, you know, when science was up and coming and we were giving fantastic services to the society. Science was seen as a tool that we could use to enhance our collective well-being, to better public health, to better services, which we are losing because the focus of science now is, for example, in terms of drinking water, it's meeting regulations and not public safety. So we have to reimagine how science could serve the purpose of being as a doer of good and as a harbinger of a lot more progress in the future. So yes, Flint is a great example where this happened, but it was a little too late. I think as we train the next generation of youth in this country and across the world, we should emphasize that no matter what field you're in, whether STEM or outside, the primary focus of science has always been finding ways and means to enhance public good. And that's what I hope to convey with the Flint story when I come to Kalamazoo next week.
Is there perhaps an opportunity here to reevaluate education, science education in particular? I mean, other fields have also kind of gone through this, medicine, business, journalism, the idea of the ethics of the profession along with the technical aspects and those sort of things. Is maybe that part of the conversation here that should be had about science education?
Absolutely. When you look at undergraduate education, you know, you get a first-rate education in this country. There is so much good, so much progress, so much research that's going on. You cannot help but be excited with all the fantastic things that are going on in U.S. universities. But the problem is, and one that we often overlook, is we do not give students a guide map or some sort of a moral compass, or at least an inkling of how would you go about navigating the field? Because, believe it or not, scientists and engineers and all other fields within STEM will face ethical challenges, whether you like it or not, or whether you know it or not. So integrating some sort of ethical training, which is not the conventional kind, you know, we sit around the table and talk about Aristotle 2,000 years ago or more, that wouldn't do the good that we need. I think what we need in terms of educating our undergraduates and high school students is an understanding that adult life, quote-unquote, in these fields requires you to make decisions where if you do it wrong or if you don't think through things, you can mess up, you can cause problems. So definitely, I think, a critical component that should be added and should be mandatory and should be fun. You should be sitting in a class and be excited that you'll talk about Flint, for example, a case study that is ongoing, and you've seen ethical implications of wrongdoing, of not being scientific enough, of just messing around. And, you know, but my point is, definitely I agree. with Virginia Tech, I think, and with our group specifically, what was different was we took a class called Engineering Ethics and the Public by Dr. Mark Edwards again, and Dr. Yana Lambrinidu, who is an anthropologist based in D.C., created a few years ago based on their experiences in D.C., where they saw powerful government agencies just lying and covering things up. And they thought that we need to make sure the next generation that comes and gets trained, at least under us, is actually, I mean, aware of these things. So the class that is taught every year, it's a graduate level class, but I'd hope at some point we can find an undergraduate level class and integrate it in different technical class, conventional technical classes, where people talk about genuine gut-wrenching dilemmas that people will face in the future, and they'll have to make, you know, conscious decisions about these things. So ethics should definitely, like in journalism, like in medicine, you know, we should find a way of integrating ethical thinking in our conventional training.
What's next for the Flint water study? Do you plan to keep this going for a while?
I think so, because based on what we know, I think we will be required to command. We've said we'd say yes to anything as long as the citizens need it. So I think the citizens ask for more testing and a coherent message coming from all the scientists and experts on whether the water is safe to drink, how to go about fixing this problem. So we should be involved in some sense going forward in terms of testing, in terms of putting out public health communication, working with the government at the city and the state level and the federal level to see what services we can offer to, you know, go about fixing the problem and hopefully rebuilding Flint in the future.
Sid Roy, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Gordon.
Sid Roy is Communication Director for Virginia Tech University's Flint Water Study. He's a graduate student at Virginia Tech. Roy will speak at Western Michigan University Tuesday night at an event sponsored by the Lee Honors College.